You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome to The Hockey Show. My name is Roy Bellamy. David Drucker is not here. He is sick. He's on Zoom, as you can see on video. He's to my left.
He's got that Disney flu.
I mean, come on, man. You should have known what was going to happen as soon as you took your family to Disney World. You were going to come back with some sort of illness. You knew that.
Well, we usually survive it, but we're usually only there for like a weekend. This time we did 4 days, 4 parks. Mm. So a day after being home, all of a sudden it kind of smacked me in the face. But it's all good, man. The show must go on. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about this week.
Yes, we do, such as the Florida Panthers. Moving on to the second round. We are going to go over the two games that happened since we were last on. Also in the show today, we have two very special guests. One of them is a trophy. We'll talk about that later. But
The trophy
that everybody's fighting over. But let's talk about Game 4 and Game 5. Game 4, the Panthers went in with a 3-0 lead, looking to sweep the Tampa Bay Lightning. That happened on Saturday. We were there, Dave.
Yes. Fun time in Tampa, you know. Some hockey, some drinks, yeah. You know, some fun fans outside.
Yeah.
I think that was, you know, like you got to give Tampa one in the series, right? They're you know, two-time Stanley Cup champion recently. They're the class of the Eastern Conference until someone says they're not. Maybe the Panthers are saying they're not now. But yeah, it didn't surprise me to see Tampa get a game in their home building. They were pretty jacked up. And then didn't surprise me to see what happened in Game 5 either.
Yeah, well, the Panthers in Game 4 started off a bit rough. I mean, they got into early penalty trouble. And the Panthers ended up going down 3-0 at the end of the first period. What happened there?
No 5-on-5. I mean, that first period was penalty filled. I think all the goals was either power play, shorthanded. There was a 4-on-4 goal. Just not the way the Panthers want to play the game. It's not the way that they've succeeded so far this year. And Tampa really leaned into it, for their credit. I mean, we've said it a lot, Roy, during that series, that it was going to come down to special teams. And I think in Game 4 was like the fears coming to fruition. That's what we didn't want to happen.
That's exactly right. We did come into the series saying, don't take penalties. And they took penalties in the first period. In fact, the Panthers only had 5 shots on goal in the first period. 5 shots on goal. I mean, that's not going to win you a lot of hockey games when you don't have that much rubber on nets, unfortunately.
Especially against that goalie.
There was a glimmer of hope in the second period, though. The Panthers did knock that down to a 1-goal deficit, but then the Tampa Bay Lightning shut them down in the third period. Once again, 5 shots on goal in the third period this time. 5 shots on goal. That's not going to win you any games either, Dave.
No, especially when you're trying to come from behind in a hostile building. But look, I think big picture, when I look at this game, it's like, all right, the Tampa Bay Lightning, they got maybe 3 or 4 periods of them playing their hockey that they'd be happy with in an entire series, 5 games. And I think that's something that if you're the Panthers, you can really live with.
Steven Stamkos, Brandon Hagel, and Braden Point, all three of them had goals in this game. Steven Stamkos had 2 goals. Victor Hedman had 3 assists. It was the return of Mikhail Sergachev, and that must have brought a lot of momentum Tampa's way.
Yeah, big emotional boost for getting Sergachev back in the lineup. He had said that he was hoping to play in Game 1, but there was a little bit of a setback. But, I mean, either way, clearly there was a bit of a difference in Tampa. They got a nice little jolt of energy from having Sergachev back there, and he's a spark plug. I mean, he's a guy, you know, as a Panther fan, I'm sure you hate to play against him, because not only is he a very good defender with offensive skills, but he's also a tough guy. He's one of the guys that really stirs things up, and maybe, Roy, his absence in the series is why we didn't see so much of that stuff.
Yeah, that's right, and 1 assist in his return. And as we said, the Lightning had the better power play of the entire series in that game, because they only had 2 power play goals, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, Panthers were...
It was all Stamkos.
It was all Stamkos, and really, I mean, he brought it in this series. I mean...
Big time.
Most of the people on the Lightning roster, he really brought it. Let's move over to Game 5, as the Panthers lost Game 4, 6-3. A lot different in this situation. Although the Panthers did have a slow start in the first period, and we'll get to what the controversy was in this game in a little bit, but they had two goals wiped off because of goaltender interference, and we'll get to John Cooper's comments in a second. It was a slow start for the Panthers, and the first goal that was wiped away was from a Anthony Duclair goaltender interference as Anthony Cirelli actually scored on that goal, and the Panthers ended up challenging, and they won the challenge. So they went into the first intermission scoreless. What do you think about the first period in that one?
I thought it was a very typical elimination game type period. Florida didn't want to fall behind. Florida wanted to play its game. Tampa certainly wanted to bring it to the Panthers, but didn't really have the kind of success that they had in game four. And I mean, in terms of the goal review, look, Duclair put his skate like right in the middle of Bob's business. It was in the crease. He couldn't play his position the way that he was entitled to. I thought that was an easy one.
Yeah.
Second one, not so much.
The second one, not so much. We'll get into that in a second. The second period, they got off to a fast start. I don't know what Paul Maurice said in the locker room during the first intermission. I don't even think he said anything. I think the players knew what was going on. I think they corrected themselves in the situation. But Carter Verhaeghe ended up scoring within the first minute to make it 1-0, Dave.
Yeah, and Paul Maurice even said after the game that he felt that goal by Verhaeghe really got the ball rolling for the Panthers after, you know, what we just said was a tentative first period. But yeah, I mean, look, this is the home crowd, the Panthers, you see the video playing there. Florida really got, I think this is where they took the series over. This is where Florida said, that goal right there, making it 4-1, the building explodes, Evan Rodriguez explodes. Like, when you know that Tampa is basically playing for their season in those moments, they're throwing everything they have at the table, and the Florida not only is withstanding it, but then turning around and attacking. That, for me, was just kind of a very, poetic is the right road, but to be doing that against Tampa after everything that the Panthers have been through with that franchise over the, you know, the entirety of their existence, but more so the last, you know, when Tampa's been really good, they've won their two Stanley Cups recently, tons of trips to the final. I think very poetic for the Panthers to win it and to win it like that.
Alexander Barkov scored, and then Victor Hedman responded pretty quickly. The second goal that was disallowed by the Lightning, that was Anthony Cirelli in the crease. He was trying to get around, I believe it was Nico Mikkola in that situation. Gustav Forsling was the first goal that was disallowed. He was Anthony Duclair was trying to get around him, but Anthony Cirelli was trying to get around Nico Mikkola and spun right into Sergei Bobrovsky. And then Bobrovsky, apparently John Cooper said he just gave up on the play, and Mikhail Sergachev ended up scoring on a slap shot. But that was waved off by the referee.
Yes.
And then Tampa ended up challenging, to which they lost the challenge and then had to go on the penalty kill because of this delay of game. The Panthers did not score on that power play. You spun right into the crease and you bumped into Sergei Bobrovsky. I mean, there's not really that much to say in that situation, Dave.
Yeah, I think the key for me when looking at the play, because like when you see the spin, there's not really a whole lot of upper body contact. But if you watch their skates, his skates kind of get locked up with Bob's right skate for a moment there. And it's quick. It's not big, but it plays a big part when a goaltender is trying to shuffle left and right in the goal crease. I don't know if I agree with John Cooper that Bob gave up on the play. I think he was a little limited by what he could do. But I mean, either way, when that happened, Roy, my initial thought was, as the ref was emphatically waving it off right off the bat, my first thought was, okay, the call on the ice is going to be what's clutch or what really stands out in here. Because I think if that had been called a goal and then reviewed, I think the goal would have stood as well. I think it's just one of those plays where the call on the ice was going to be indicative of how it was going to play out. But either way, if you're Tampa, the way this has played out, this series between the goalie interference, goals getting wiped off the board, offside calls, I think there was a couple of them in the series as well. I totally get their frustration.
Yeah, and then the third period happened, and then Alexander Barkov ended up scoring on the loose puck, and that's when I said the game ended. That was when the series ended. That was it. And then, of course, the Panthers ended up scoring a few more goals with the empty net, and then that was it.
When you see Barkov celebrate like that,
that's when you know.
When Barkov actually shows some emotion, he gets down on one knee and he's, like, you don't see that from Sasha Barkov. So when that happened, I'm with you. When I saw that, I'm like, okay, we're done. Round two, here we come.
Final score 6-1, series over. Panthers had finally gotten past the Tampa Bay Lightning. The torch has passed. But there was controversy and came from the lips of John Cooper.
In this league where goals are at a premium and how, you know, all we've done is make the rules for more goal scoring. That's what we've done. And every year there seems to be something we tweak so more goals can be scored. And that's great. But you know, there's mandates, and the words were to pull a goal off the board, it has to be unbelievably egregious. That's a standard to pull a goal off the board. Well, the first one's on the board, and I couldn't find anything remotely egregious about that. You know, it's really tough. Like, Forsling is holding on. Like, it's a full penalty. He's holding on to Duclair. So he's trying to yank. He's trying to get his balance. It really does affect nothing. Bob misses the puck, and it's a net front battle, and it's in the net. Like, I can't. That's just the part for me. And then, so now we have to rebound from that. We do. And then the next one is a net front battle. And I will give the goalie credit. He quit on the play. He completely quit. Didn't see it, didn't whatever, and then flailed. And there was, I mean, maybe incidental contact at most. And then, but now we have to challenge it because they saw the reaction of the goaltender. And Bob's doing the right, you know, he duped him, and so be it. But now we have to make that challenge. And again, it's like, well, then is there net front battles aren't allowed anymore? And that's part of everybody's game. It's like the boxing out that goes there, it's like prison rules in the playoffs, but it's not prison rules for the goalie. Like, the second something happens, you know, like, we might as well put skirts on them then, if that's how it's going to be. I mean, they have to battle through stuff too. And when the players are working so hard on both teams, and it's, like I said, it's a war down there. I think we're letting the goalies off the hook. And they've got way more pads on than everybody else does.
Now, John Cooper apologized for the goalies in skirts situation. We do have a professionals women's hockey league out there, for crying out loud. So, yeah, not a good look. But he apologized. I don't know how. I mean, was it disingenuous, that apology? I don't know. But
no, I don't think it was, Roy. Just the kind of guy that John Cooper is. He's a good dude. He's one of the good guys in the league. You ask around, you hear nothing but good things about him. You interact with him, he's been great. And he came right out and apologized afterwards. And I think it was sincere. If you watch back the video, even, Roy, you can see that after a few seconds, all of a sudden he takes a deep breath and he slows down. And it's like he realized what he had just said. And look, at the end of the day, this is a guy, he's got two young daughters that play sports. So he's not going to be the opposite of a champion in this situation. I think it was a, you know, just the kind of the slip of the tongue in the moment. And for John Cooper, I would give him the benefit of the doubt. I think it brings some attention, as most of these comments do. I think him coming out and owning it right away before he was even asked about it, my guess would be that he felt terrible afterwards, just based on who he is as a hockey coach, who he is as a family man. But yeah, it's, you know, all around, it's just not a good thing.
All right, the Florida Panthers are going to the second round. They will face either Boston or Toronto. They will be playing Game 7 tomorrow, which is Saturday. Coming up next on the Hockey Show, we have Howie Burrow, the keeper of the cup, and we also have the cup. So we're going to have both, yes, of those guests in the studio. Unfortunately, they've missed out on it because he is sick.
Thanks, Roy.
You picked a great time to be sick. That's coming up next. All right, we are joined by two very special guests. We are joined by Howie Burrow, the keeper of the cup, and we're joined by that trophy right there. We got a whole bunch of players fighting for that special thing right there with all the names on it and that big bowl on top. That is
Lord Stanley
trophy. Yeah, Lord Stanley created that trophy from, like, I would say halfway up, and then they just added rings to the bottom. That is a magnificent-looking trophy. Howie Burrow is the keeper of the cup. Now, how exactly does one apply to become the keeper of the cup?
Well, I was very fortunate. I never did apply. I actually started working at the Hall of Fame as a volunteer back in 2004. Mm. Wow. And my very first event was the induction ceremonies that year. So after that, I started working part-time hours in the museum and then eventually starting to travel with other trophies and artifact displays. And then Phil Pritchard, my boss, in 2009, asked me if I wanted to start traveling with the cup. So I've been doing it since.
Wow, that's amazing. So you could basically be a janitor, not saying that you were a janitor, and you can all of a sudden become the keeper of the cup. That is an amazing situation there.
Yes, pretty much.
And me and Dave have met Phil many times. He's an absolute good guy. He's a legitimately good guy. And last year, when we went to the Hall of Fame ceremony with Roberto Luongo going in there, he wore shorts and sandals in 20-degree Toronto weather. Like, what is he, crazy? Like, describe the guy for us.
That's a typical Phil wardrobe. That's just the way he is. I don't think he's outside very much, but he just likes to feel comfortable. And that's just the way he is. He's a very relaxed kind of guy. Very good guy, very nice guy. And he just wants to feel good and he's relaxed. But when he needs to dress up, he will. And he'll make it work wherever we go.
So, Howie, I did want to ask you about a little bit of Stanley Cup history. Like, a lot of us out here, you know, we probably have an idea of where the Cup came from, how it's kind of grown to its size right now. But obviously, you're an expert. Could you kind of give us an idea, just a little bit of Stanley Cup history?
Okay, well, the Stanley Cup, it was just the bowl originally. And it was donated by Frederick Arthur Stanley. He was the Governor General of Canada at the time. And he was appointed by Queen Victoria, actually, to govern Canada, I guess. And when he realized there was no championship award for the amateur champion within Canada, he decided to have the bowl created, I guess. And it was probably already formed, but he went out and picked out something that he thought might be an appropriate award. So if you see on the cup, on the bowl itself, the original name of it is not the Stanley Cup. It's called the Dominion Hockey Challenge Cup.
Oh, wow.
And then on the opposite side of that, it's from Stanley of Preston. So that's where it got its nickname. So It started off just as a bowl. It was probably paid about, in today's money, maybe about $50. And now it's priceless with the history. It's amazing, you know, the growth and the changes and everything that have been made to it over the years. But it's just something that all the players, you know, throughout their whole lifetime and careers dream about winning it. And when you do and get your name on it, it's something very special.
Chris Cody has arrived here for some strange reason.
No, Belly.
He's always welcome.
Belly Dworky, sorry to interrupt here, but I just came in to look at her.
Oh, wow.
Just wanted to get a good look at her.
She's beautiful.
Don't blame you at all.
I'll see you in a couple months, baby. I love you. I miss you. Can I come in and give it a hug? No? All right, fine. I won't.
Well, don't touch it. We're superstitious around here. Like, we don't want to jinx the Panthers. And speaking of which,
I'll see you in a little bit, baby.
How do you feel about players and maybe even people, fans of the teams that might be superstitious who don't want to touch the cup because it might jinx them from actually winning?
PK Subban running away.
Yeah.
Yes, that was funny. I was there when that happened too, so that was good. But, anyways, players that are still trying to play for it and they're in the league, they won't go near it because obviously they're superstitious too and they feel like they, you know, want to win it before they can touch it. Fans can be the same way. They don't want to jinx their team. But other fans embrace it. And I always say, you know, why not? Everybody that's on that cup, all the names, they're all champions. So why not take the good vibe from it? And if your team has never won, why not give that good vibe right back and cheer them on and give them luck to maybe finally win it? So that's the way I see it anyways. But everybody has their own superstitions. So, you know, whatever works for them, you know, that's great.
You're a glass half full kind of guy.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Howie, we've seen over the years a couple of instances where the Stanley Cup has maybe been put in some compromising positions. I think it was a couple of years ago with the Avalanche. They actually dented it like the night they won it on the ice. Obviously, it always gets fixed and it's all in good fun and it's fine. But I'm just curious, in your experience, have there been any situations where you've just been like really scared, like, oh, my God, what's going to happen to the Stanley Cup?
Once in a while, but I mean, we talk to the players, and of course they respect it, and we just give them some rules to follow by, and you can't help maybe if an accident does happen, but we always try to eliminate those situations if we can. What happened in Colorado a couple years ago, we were very fortunate that when the cup went down, it only dented the very bottom base of it, which is made of aluminum. So that's actually replaced a couple times during the year anyways. It's just where the players grab it and hoist it. So we're very fortunate with all the times that it's handled. It's in pretty good shape.
There's like a hammering or anything like that when it's dented. You just like pop open the bottle and just like ding, 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 ding with a hammer.
Well, we wouldn't do it ourselves because we're not professionals in handling silverware. But we do have a silversmith in Montreal. And we actually had to take it to Montreal in 2021, Tampa Bay. Lightning right after their parade. The cup fell from a table, and the bowl was flattened on one side, so we had to take it up to Montreal to get it repaired. And as you can see, it still looks pretty good. So we do our best to keep it in the best shape that we can.
You absolutely do. And you guys obviously wear the white gloves, and you have the silver polish that you guys probably carry with you all the time. Like, what is the protocol? Like, what is the handling of the actual cup from place to place that you guys have to go through?
Okay, so first of all, the silver polish probably only happens once, maybe twice a year.
Oh, wow.
Probably okay. Just before it's presented. You can't use too much silver polish because it actually does some wear and tear to the cup itself. Mm-hmm. So our procedure really is just we clean it every day, soap and water. It removes the fingerprints and the lipstick marks and keeps it nice and shiny. Yeah, I mean, our job is just, we'll have to rub it a few times in certain spots to make sure that it's staying as shiny as possible for the cameras and everything else. But for the most part, it's very durable, and it's, made from a metal that's very pliable, too. It's soft, but, it's lasted all this time throughout the years and the handling and everything. So we're pretty happy with, the way it was first designed and the way it is now.
So, Howie, we all know, well, in case the people watching don't know, everybody who wins the Stanley Cup that summer, they get 24 hours with the cup. Every player, coaches, I believe, also, they all get their kind of time to spend it with their family, to take it wherever they want. They can take it overseas, to their hometowns, whatever. And you, as a keeper, have to go wherever the cup goes. So, obviously, that leads to an interesting question. What are some of the weirdest things done with the cup that you've seen? What are some of the funnest places? Like, is there anything that stands out in your mind from over the years that really kind of like, wow, that was awesome?
Okay, well, first of all, it's not 24 hours anymore. Back in around 2009, there was a midnight curfew put on the cup.
Oh!
And that is because we...
Cup curfew!
The cup keepers are human. We need some sleep, too. But we're traveling all the time, so we have to be prepared to go. Lots of early flights and stuff. So the players do get a full day with it. So it usually averages out to, 14, 16 hours every day with them. With the stuff that goes into the cup, the players, of course, take it back to their hometowns and communities, and they'll drink from it at their parties, champagne and beer, and they'll even allow the kids to have some fun, too, and they'll put, some juice or, chocolate milk or something in it.
Ice cream.
And ice cream, yes. Some of the food that's been in it is ice cream and cereal. Chicken wings, pierogies. Alexander Ovechkin put $15,000 worth of caviar in the bowl.
Oh my God.
You name it, it's been in the cup.
Oh, have there been any like heartwarming stories? Because these guys go through a lot of pain and anguish for this trophy. And when they bring it back to home to the families, I'm sure there's got to be some heartwarming stories there.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of emotions there with, all the hard work that the players actually put in to winning it themselves. But the parents and the families, they put in a lot, too, helping cheer these guys on over the years and supporting them with the time and the money and everything that it takes to play the game. And then, to follow them around and support them at the arenas when they play. But there's been a lot of stories with players that maybe, are fortunate enough to maybe be with their grandparents or something at the time of the cup, at their house. And then later on, one of those grandparents maybe passed on. And fortunately, they have those memories, that they can say, hey, at least they were there with them at that time. Other times they're not, but, my favorite time with the cup when the players is when they take it to the children's hospitals and they spend some time with them just to put some smiles on their faces and, brighten up their day and everything too. But, overall, it's a very emotional day. It's one of the best days in a player's lifetime or a coach or anybody like that. And, it's something that may never, ever happen again. Some guys are fortunate to win more than one, but, if it is only one, then, that's something they'll always remember.
So, Howie, when we spoke to Phil up at the Luongo induction, he told us there was a few moments where he was on the ice with the cup that just really stood out to him. I believe he said 94 MSG when the Rangers won it, and I think he said when Ray Bourque won it in Colorado in 2000. So kind of the same question to you. Have you had any moments that you really remember and cherish from when the cup was given out, like on the ice at those times?
Well, unfortunately, my duties don't allow me to be on the ice at the time. Phil is the official curator at the Hockey Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. So he presents it with another gentleman, Craig Campbell. But Phil was very nice to me one year, a couple years ago, when we had the home opener with the Colorado Avalanche. And Phil had asked me to carry the cup out with him. So they would present the the championship banner and stuff. So to me, that was a very cool moment. And other than the cup itself, I've been very fortunate to present the Prince of Wales Trophy, the Campbell Bowl in the past, and also the President's Trophy. So I've basically done everything I could possibly do.
That's excellent. I gotta assume that Phil giving the cup to Joe Sakic, who then gave it to Ray Bourque, was probably a special one for him. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it would be for me.
Yeah.
Giving the Ray Bourque would have been absolutely cool for, 22 years of service?
Yeah, absolutely.
I would think that would be cool.
Yeah.
Harry Burrow is the keeper of the cup. We really appreciate you bringing this majestic trophy in here, and we appreciate you joining us today.
Well, thank you for having us. It's great. Great to be here.
Howdy, listeners. It's Mike, and a lot has changed over the years. Just look at sports. There's instant replay, a three-point line. There were shifts and then not shifts. But one thing that hasn't changed over the course of all those things I just mentioned, the great taste of Miller Lite. That's right. It's so good. And it's also less filling. So what's the best thing about Miller Lite, the original light beer? Well, Miller Lite sparked this debate way back in 1975. We still haven't settled it. Be like me. I don't pick one. I like it because it's both. Miller Lite keeps it simple. Undebatable quality. Great taste. Only 96 calories. It's a beer that strips away everything that you don't need and holds on to what matters most. You don't have to choose what's best. Be like me. Say both. Miller Lite. Great taste. And is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.